We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
What?
Hey, haven't you heard?
No, what's the word?
What's going on?
I don't know.
Hey, the glory! What's the story?
Hey, hey, hey. Well, good morning, and welcome to the special WFAN 33rd anniversary edition of Hey, LaGory, What's the Story? Happy July 5th, 2020. Wow, 33 years ago yesterday, Hey, LaGory, What's the Story debuted. It was July 4th, 1987, 4 days after WFAN, the first all-sports radio station in the country, went on the air. And that theme opening you heard was put together by the talented Bill Rodman, who was a producer with the radio station for many years and my producer in the early days. And he literally went into a bar, held a microphone up, and got everyone in there to yell in unison, "Hey, LaGory, what's the story?" I just love the pacing and the timing of the piece, and I thought it was so brilliant. So I used it for the opening of every show I hosted each weekend for 24-plus years that the show was on. Well, this morning I'm going to take some calls leading up to some very special guests that I'm going to pop on. So if you'd like to say hello, please dial in now at 1-877-337-6666. My very first show was, as I said, July 4th, 1987. And, you know, I knew I had to debut with a bang, so to speak. Hey, it was the 4th of July after all. And earlier in the week, I was able to snag an exclusive interview with Doc Gooden, who had just gotten out of Smithers rehab. And, you know, he was the story back then. I mean, the Mets had won the World Series in 86. He had an incredible season, 17-6 record. He became the youngest pitcher to start an all-star game. And he definitely was the ace for the Mets going into those playoffs. And, of course, the Mets won the World Series in 86, but Doc did not show up for the team's victory parade. It was later learned that he was doing drugs in his dealer's apartment. And then he was arrested in December of 86 and tested positive for cocaine during spring training in 1987. And it was well documented that he eventually went to Smithers Rehab Center on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. And so when I was putting together, my very first show, I was determined to be the first reporter to talk to him when he came out of rehab. So Doc gets to Shea Stadium, but of course the Mets PR staff were protecting him as they were doing their job, not letting anybody talk with him. But, you know, I just went right up to him directly in the locker room and asked him if he would do the interview. And he said, sure. It was that easy. And, you know, I had to first explain to Doc Gooden what WFAN was, because the station was not even on the air yet. This was right before the station debuted. So then I asked if he would go to the Jets locker room with me so I could interview him there privately so that, you know, the other reporters wouldn't stick their microphones in his face. And we did the interview, and it aired on my very first show, and it was quite the debut. I mean, many of the newspapers wrote about it, and it was really, I thought, a wonderful start to the show. So through the years, you know, the show aired on Saturday mornings, overnights for a long time, then Sunday evenings, and you know, during that, a lot of the time that I hosted this weekly show, I was doing a lot of other things. I hosted a primetime weekly show called Conversations with Ann Liguori, which aired on the Golf Channel the first Wednesday. The Golf Channel was on the air. So in addition to being an original on WFAN, I'm also very proud of the fact that I was an original host on the Golf Channel with this show. And, you know, I played golf with an A-list of celebrity guests that I booked for the show and interviewed them while golfing with them. I mean, everybody from Joe Pesci, Sylvester Stallone, Celine Dion, Matthew McConaughey, Johnny Bench, Kevin Costner, Vince Gill, Smokey Robinson. And then, in addition to that, I was hosting and producing a show called Sports Interview with Ann Liguori. And, you know, was the executive producer of that show. I created it, booked all the guests, sold it to sponsors, distributed it, researched, promoted it. So, you know, where did all those years go? I mean, I was busy during the years I was hosting Hey Liguori, What's the Story? And of course, hosting the overnight show from midnight to 5 and sometimes midnight to 6, I mean, we took a lot of phone calls. Bob from Little Ferry was one of my favorite callers. And the regulars, you remember Doris from Rego Park and Jan from New Jersey and Miriam from Forest Hills, Lonesome George from the Bronx. And, of course, Short Al from Brooklyn. Who could forget Short Al from Brooklyn? And I know I'm not mentioning a lot of the people who would call regularly, but I want you all to know how much I appreciate the fact that you were a big part of the show all those years, and I truly appreciate your support. So there are a lot of memorable moments, and a couple of my highlights here before we go to the phone calls. I'll never forget having the great Jim Brown on the show. And I had interviewed him for my TV show a few times before he came on the show on WFAN. And we had become friends. But when he was on my Hey Liguori, What's the Story show, you know, we went to the phone to take callers. And the first caller asked, "Hey, Jim, what about the woman you threw off the balcony?" And I thought, you know, he was going to hang up on me. I could not believe that that was the first question or any question. And there was a long pause. And then Jim Brown answered. He said, well, he didn't answer right away. He said, "I thought you were my friend, Ann. How could you allow a phone call like that on the air?" And, you know, I had to kind of come up with some kind of answer to him in a matter of seconds. And I had read about the accounts of him throwing a woman off the balcony at a party in the Hollywood Hills. And so the story had been out there for a while. So I followed up with, "Well, Jim, you know, I read about that story as well. Whatever happened?" And again, I thought he was going to hang up on me because there was a long, long pause. And he just said simply, "She never pressed charges." And I quickly moved on to another subject, but that was a pretty crazy start to an interview with the intimidating Jim Brown, but always a fascinating interview and always controversial. And, you know, he's been on the show many, many times since. So we remain friends to this day. One time he invited me to his home in the Hollywood Hills when he was conducting a program that he founded called the AmeriCan program, where he would teach life management skills to gang members. And I can remember arriving to his house, to this long driveway, and everybody had to walk through a metal detector before going into his house, and you had to check your weapons at the door. I almost turned around and just ran the other way. I'm like asking myself, do I really want to go in there if, you know, all these gang members are in there? And, you know, how crazy is this? But I got enough nerve to walk into the house, and it was just fascinating watching Jim Brown work his magic. He had these guys just looking up to him, and he was just really trying to mediate peace between the two gangs and also teach them skills, life management skills. Switching to boxing, I'll never forget having Kevin Rooney on the show. Kevin was Mike Tyson's illustrious trainer before Tyson fired him right before he went to Tokyo to fight Buster Douglas. And Kevin was on the air with me while we both watched this heavyweight fight live. And Rooney was obviously furious that he was fired and not in Tyson's corner, you know, for the fight that night. And then when Tyson hit the canvas for the first time ever in his career, he was being knocked out for the very first time. Kevin Rooney went ballistic. He was swearing, yelling, screaming, going crazy on the air. And I literally had to take a commercial break and pick up the phone, you know, in the studio and explain to Kevin Rooney that he couldn't say those four-letter words on the radio. Oh, my goodness. Just crazy times. As you know, I cover golf for WFAN. And my most memorable moment at a major championship was calling Tiger's infamous chip shot on the par 3-16th in the final round of the 2005 Masters. John Minko was in the studio, and he threw the update to me, and I was at Augusta covering the Masters, going on the air every 20 minutes. Back then, it was every 20 minutes during the updates. And, you know, Chris DeMarco, he had started the final round that year with a four-shot lead. And then DeMarco and Tiger get to the 16th tee, and Tiger is up by one shot. And Tiger, he hit an 8-iron. It flew over the green. The ball was like 50 feet from the hole. And just as Tiger was about to hit the pitch shot, Minko throws it to me to do the live update. And I had the opportunity to do the play-by-play call during the live update, right? I mean, timing is everything. It was just the most memorable play-by-play call I had ever done. And, you know, Tiger executed that shot just perfectly. He had to aim for an old ball mark the size of a dime, which was about 20 feet away from where he was standing. And the ball had just enough spin on it to make a stop exactly where he aimed it, took the right turn, rolled down the cup. And I remember, you know, announcing that the ball is tracking for the hole perfectly, perfect speed and direction. And then the ball hung on the lip of the cup for 1.8 seconds with that Nike logo in full view hanging on the lip of the cup before dropping in. And, it was indeed, you know, the best chip shot in Masters history, maybe in all of golf history. And I was so excited that I got to do the play-by-play of the call. And just by coincidence, because with the updates every 20 minutes, you know, John Minko just, you know, he threw it to me. And it was just as Tiger was, you know, hitting that shot. And, of course, you all remember Vern Lundquist's call. In your life, have you ever seen anything like that? Unbelievable. Well, I have a lot of stories. We're going to get to them at 877. And I'd like to take your phone calls here at 877-337-6666. Let's first say hi to Tom from Cooperstown. Good morning. You're on the fan, Tom. Welcome.
Hey, good morning, Ann. How are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for checking in.
Hey, no problem. Appreciate all the stories over the years. I wanted to follow up on your Jim Brown story. Did you play tennis with him one time?
I did. Well, that's how I first met the great Jim Brown. I was down in Tampa for the Super Bowl and went to the NFL. The NFL had a tennis, like a celebrity tennis tournament. And I went and, you know, I used to play a lot of tennis. And Jim Brown was walking off the court. And I went up to him and introduced myself. And he was just finished playing. And I said, hey, you want to have a hit? And he kind of stared down at me with those intimidating eyes, and he kind of started laughing, like, oh, like this woman wants to play tennis with me. and then he said, sure. And so we go on the court, and you know, I played a lot of tennis. I played in college, and I realized that he couldn't. We were warming up a little bit, and I realized he could run side to side, but he really couldn't run that well. His knees weren't that great, and he couldn't run that well from the baseline to the net. So we played a set, and I drop shot at him, and I actually beat him 6-4.
That's great.
So you know, so I can brag, you know, about beating Jim Brown, one of the greatest, you know, running backs ever in football. But yeah, and then I played golf in a celebrity tournament up in Elmira, the Ernie Davis Memorial Tennis Golf Tournament. And I was the only woman playing in this event, and Jim Brown and Lawrence Taylor and a bunch of, you know, NFL greats were playing in this tournament, and I was just honored to be playing. And they had a long drive hole, and of course, you know, for the women, you could play from the forward tees, and so I went to the forward tees, and I hit my tee shot, and it went 50 yards past where the long drive sign was, right? So I drive up to that hole, and I drive up to the sign, and on the sign were the names Jim Brown, and then right under Jim Brown, Lawrence Taylor. And I'm like, I'm not going to move this sign to my ball, because, you know, I teed up from the forward tees. And the guy running the tournament said, he was on that hole watching everybody's long drives. He goes, no, Ann, you got the long drive. Move that sign. So anyway, it was fun. So that was another kind of bragging right, that I was able to beat Lawrence Taylor and Jim Brown in a long drive competition. But of course, I had a little head start. Anyway, Tom, thanks for checking in. We're going to take a quick break, come back, and continue with phone calls and some special guests and some more stories. We'll be right back.
What?
Hey, haven't you heard?
No, what's the word?
What's going on?
I don't know.
Hey, the Lori, what's the story?
All right. Well, we're back. Hey, LaGori, what's the story? All right. So if you know, but I started the Ann LaGori Foundation about 12 years ago, and have organized and hosted a charity golf tournament that takes place on a prestigious golf course in the Hamptons every year for the past 22 years. In fact, the tournament this year is rescheduled for Thursday, October 8th at the Maidstone Club in East Hampton. And our mission is twofold: to raise money and awareness for cancer research, prevention, and care, and to mentor women in sports media. And to that end, I welcome Allie Waddington to the show. Allie was one of the recipients of the Ann LaGori Foundation Sports Media Scholarship with the New York chapter of Women in Communications, who administer this scholarship every year. And now she works as the PR coordinator for the Philadelphia Eagles. So welcome, Allie. How are you?
Hi, Ann. I'm good. How are you? Thank you so much for having me on.
I'm good, thanks. I'm good. It's so great to have you on, and I'm so proud of you and so thrilled that you were able to win this scholarship in, what, 2016?
Yeah, 2016. I can't believe it was already 4 years ago.
So tell me, so you're working now with the Philadelphia Eagles?
Yes, so I'm with the Eagles. I actually started out there in 2017 after I graduated with my master's degree at LaSalle, and I am now, as you said, a public relations coordinator, and it honestly has been a dream job for me, and I really wouldn't be here if it weren't for that scholarship, the Ann LaGori Foundation scholarship that I received in 2016. So I'm just so incredibly grateful for that.
Well, I'm so glad that, you know, we've gotten to know each other. You came out to the charity golf tournament a number of years ago with your dad. And
yeah,
we got to really, I don't pick the winners, but every year the New York chapter of Women in Communications just picks these incredible, you know, just dynamic women who are pursuing careers in sports media, and every one of them has made me so proud. They've gone on to incredible jobs, and you are one of the early recipients. And so I congratulate you, and I'm so delighted that you're actually working your dream job, because you grew up outside of Philadelphia, right? And you always rooted for the
Eagles. It was a dream job for me, and honestly, getting the Ann LaGori Foundation scholarship was so impactful for me, because getting to hear, not only meet you in person, but getting to hear your stories about how you broke into the field of sports and, you know, it's because of women like you that women like me aren't afraid to go after their jobs. I know it can be a little intimidating at first. I mean, I work in a department with all males and I'm the only female. So it is very reassuring knowing that I have somebody like you who I can lean on and ask for advice and listen to your stories. So that scholarship was huge for me.
Well, I am so thankful that you called in and I'm so proud of you. Continued success, Allie, and let's make it a point to get together soon. I know you're really busy now with the Eagles, and you will be as they start things up, hopefully, very, very soon. So, but I'd love to see you again. So come on out to the golf event, or let's make it a point to get together.
Yes, definitely. And congrats on your 33rd year.
Yeah,
awesome.
I started
that
when
awesome.
I was 12. Thanks, Allie. You have a great morning.
Thank you. You too, Ann.
Take care. All right, we're going to go back to the phones here at 877-337-6666. Frank, good morning. Frank Darby, how are you?
Good morning, Ann. And, hey, congrats on 33. That's a great number. And, you know, thanks for all you've done for not only me just by listening and, you know, learning, but how you've mentored all these women through the years and, you know, got them jobs and just gave them great advice. So, you know, the world needs more mentors like you. So,
oh, are you sweet? I know you have a daughter, Frank. Is she thinking about pursuing a career in sports media?
Well, she's 10, and we let her introduce our show on Sirius XM. So she likes being on the radio. And, yeah, I think that she definitely likes that. I think that and journalism and you know, she loves music and acting. So, you know, like I said, it's nice letting her see successful women in, you know, all kinds of great jobs.
Well, it gives me a lot of satisfaction to mentor women and men in sports media, and it means a lot to me. And, you know, perhaps that will be one of my legacies, because I love watching these young people, you know, follow their dream, work really hard, and go out there and, you know, really do what they love to do, right? It's all about following your passion and working hard and accomplishing your goals. And so I hope your daughter, you know, can do the same. And you've been a great support all these years, Frank. I love you. You're so much fun. I love listening to your show on Sirius PJ Tour Radio. And thanks again for checking in. You're just a wonderful guy. Really,
great.
Really adore you.
Congrats. Nice listening to you, and have a great weekend.
Thanks so much. All right, we're going to take a quick break, come back, and check in with a true trailblazer in the world of tennis. Katrina Adams is the past president of the United States Tennis Association, and stays very involved in the game. And we're going to check in with Katrina Adams right after this.
What?
Hey, haven't you heard?
No, what's the word?
What's going on?
I don't know.
Hey, LaGuardi, what's the story?
What story is this? I love that opening. It was so much fun. And as you listeners know, you know, I've covered the U.S. Open Tennis Championships every year since 1982 and on WFAN every year since the station started in 1987. And there is no greater sporting event in this country, in my opinion, than the U.S. Open Tennis Championship, 14 days, which pours so much money into our city's economy and such a global showcase for top tennis talent in the world. And joining me now is a true trailblazer herself, Katrina Adams, past president, chairperson, and CEO of the United States Tennis Association, immediate past chairperson of the U.S. Open, and current chairperson of the ITF Fed Cup and Gender Equality in Tennis Committees. Good morning, Katrina. Thanks for checking in.
Good morning, Ann. Thanks for having me. How's it going?
It's going great. It's a great Sunday morning here on the east end of Long Island, and I'm just thrilled that you were able to come on. You know, tennis has been such a big part of my life, not only playing the sport, but covering this U.S. Open Tennis Championship all these years, and just so many highlights. I can remember one of my favorite interviews of all time was with the great Roger Federer, and you know, I was able to bring in Rolex as a sponsor of a segment here on WFAN, and we named it the Rolex Most Memorable Moment. And just having the opportunity to sit down with Roger, I think it was at the Carlisle Hotel, and it was a few days before the U.S. Open was going to start. And I think it was in 2008, and he went on this run winning the U.S. Open. I mean, it was five straight U.S. Open titles that he had won, and this was right before he was, you know, went on to win his fifth U.S. Open title. And boy, what a class act, right, Katrina? I mean, he's just special.
Yeah, he's amazing. He's a great, not only is he a great player, but he's a great person.
He really, really is. And, you know, I think we are privileged to live in a sports era where we have extraordinary talent in tennis, right? And golf, really. But, you know, you have Roger earning 20 Grand Slam titles, Serena Williams, just incredible, at 23 Grand Slam titles, one short of the all-time record. And then you got Nadal at 19, you have Novak Djokovic. I mean, the tennis that we've been able to see these last 10, 15 years, it's just phenomenal, right?
Well, it's a great era of tennis, both on the men and women's side, with so many class acts, but the talent has just been phenomenal, and each player has just been pushing the next player to be the best that he or she can be, and so it's been a joy to actually be a part of it for these decades in my career.
And you, Katrina, I can remember watching you on the Arthur Ashe Stadium court. You were a doubles specialist and won 20 WTA doubles titles, and your partner in many of those wins was Zena Garrison. I remember Zena really well. And what are some of your highlights from some of those matches at the U.S. Open?
Well, you know, it's really about the crowds. You know, I mean, there are no greater fans in the world than in New York. Although it is a global event, you know, you got a lot of New Yorkers that are coming out and they really root for their Americans. So, you know, when you're out there on the court and you've got, you know, 20,000 people, or even on the outside court with 1,000 people or 500 people, whatever it is, you know, the energy just really motivates you and gets you going. And, you know, and that's a factor that's going to be lost this year.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what do you think about a U.S. Open with no spectators?
Well, let's just pray that we can still have a U.S. Open. You know, with the coronavirus starting to grow back in other areas of the country, it's, you know, we're on pins every day. But, you know, the fact that we are doing everything possible, Stacey Allister, who's our first female tournament director, and she's our chief of professional tennis, it's crossed every T and dotted every I and preparing for this Open with the medical staff and security, et cetera, to make sure that we can provide the best possible event for the players in a bubble, to protect them, to protect the staff and to protect the tournament, to give, you know, hundreds of millions of people around the world an opportunity to watch a Grand Slam tennis event.
I know Djokovic tested positive a couple weeks ago at his own exhibition in Eastern Europe. What about these guys coming here from overseas to compete? What do you think? Do you think most of them will come? They'd have to, what, quarantine for maybe 10 to 14 days before, you know, they go out anywhere once they get here. So how do you think that may affect the
field they're not going, the tournament? Yeah, they're not going anywhere once they get here, but from the hotel and to the facility. So with no fans on the facility will really turn into a huge playground for them. Obviously, we have some of the best food for the players anyway, so they'll be able to have breakfast, lunch, and dinner if they want. They're going to have a lot of other sporting activities for them, recreational activities, and then they're going back to the hotel. So, you know, it was a complaint by, you know, funny enough, Novak Djokovic originally because he just felt that we were going overboard, etc. And then, of course, he has his Adria Tour event of where he and several other players tested positive. So I think he's maybe thinking differently now and respecting the fact that the U.S. Open is preparing such a strict environment for them for their own protection. And so will they come over? Yes, they'll come over. And they'll play. I mean, it's the U.S. Open. We've only had one Grand Slam event thus far this year with the Australian Open. Roland Garros has, you know, quickly postponed their event to 2 weeks after the Open. And Wimbledon had to cancel because they, you know, we would be at Wimbledon right now, middle weekend, middle Sunday off. But, you know, they have a very small window for their event because of the climate, the grass, the weather and daylight. So we're hoping that we can really carry the U.S. Open off without a hitch.
Well, I've admired your career. You made that transition from a player to an executive, which I'll have to have you on again soon. And I'd love to hear all about that and you know, how you did that. But you're a superstar in the tennis world, Katrina, and I thank you so much for coming on this morning for a little bit.
Well, thanks for having us or having me, and you know, let's hopefully you're tuning in for the U.S. Open come August 31st.
Exactly. Well, hopefully, I mean, I'd like to be there. I don't even know what the media policy is yet, but we'll soon find out, I guess. So, very uncertain times and very challenging times, but we'll all get through it. Katrina,
absolutely.
Thanks so much for checking in. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Ann. Have a great day.
Thank you. We're going to take a quick break and come back and talk to one of the most highly acclaimed female sportscasters of all time, the great Leslie Visser. We'll be back in a moment.
What?
Hey, haven't you heard?
No, what's the word?
What's going on?
I don't know.
Hey, Lavari, what's the story?
Well, the story is this. This is a special edition of Hey, LaGorrie, What's the Story? And that theme opening that you heard, Bill Rodman put that together. He just went into a bar with a microphone and got everybody to record that in unison. It was just brilliant. I loved it. And just so many great memories. And I had the opportunity through the years to meet some wonderful people. And one of my favorites is Leslie Visser, the only sportscaster, male or female, to have worked on the network broadcast of the Final Four, the Super Bowl, the World Series, the NBA Finals, the Triple Crown, the Olympics, the U.S. Open, and the World Figure Skating Championship. Leslie, I could go on and on about you, but I'm so glad you could pop on for a few minutes here this morning. How are you?
Oh, good morning, and congratulations to you, Anne. I was just thinking that I bet you don't know where we first met, which was about 100 years ago for your listeners. But where do you think
where?
We first met? I think we...
At Runyon's? No.
No, well, that could be, or Tucker's. No, I think we first met, but we didn't work together. 84 Olympics in L.A. I think you were doing... Weren't you doing stuff for ABC Radio?
Yes, I was. Wow,
you
that's
were.
Going way back. That was my very first Olympics.
And mine too. And you know what? I think that you had much better assignments than I did. I had like the show jumping out at Santa Anita. You know, everybody else had Mary Lou Retton. You probably had.
Oh,
but,
my God.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's where, you know, Leslie, that's where I made my on-air debut. I have to tell you this story because I was hired as a producer to cover the Olympics at ABC Radio Sports Network. I was freelancing for them in the city. And there was a woman who was producing, like the executive producer at those games, and they needed somebody to cover tennis. And it was a demonstration sport back in 84 in L.A. And she knew I played tennis and knew tennis, so she said, Ann, go cover tennis. And I'm like, okay. I was, 21, 22 years old and had not really done on-air work before, you know, I had in Tampa when going to University of South Florida, you know, in my college days. But I said, sure, I felt very confident, you know, knowing tennis and covering tennis. So I went to Pauley Pavilion, and that was my on-air debut. And, you know, it was a woman, actually, who gave me that opportunity, which I loved back in those days. 84. God, that's a long
time. Well, you
time
know what?
Ago.
You are, you know, you're known for your ingenuity, and your interviews are always adventures, you know. I remember one you did with Sylvester Stallone that it was about his sports and his art and his movies, and you just make people comfortable, and you got people that nobody would get. I mean, didn't you interview, like, Ted Williams and Jim Brown?
Oh, yeah. I told some Jim Brown stories, Ted Williams, Will Chamberlain, even Joe DiMaggio when he was honored at the Downtown Athletic Club. I had a chance to sit down with him for a few minutes. But you being, you know, so just visible everywhere, but NFL, obviously. I remember having Coach Bill Parcells on the show, Leslie, and he had just left the Giants. And I asked him what I thought was a very fair question. Coach, what are your future plans? Well, do you know he hung up on me? And then after the show, he calls me in the bullpen and he starts yelling at me for asking him about his future. He said, Ann, you know, I can't talk about that. How could you ask me that question? And I just couldn't believe it. And you know, you're friends with Coach. And I just said, listen, Coach Parcells, I said, you know, it's a fair question. You didn't tell me not to ask it. I said, you could have said no comment, but you didn't have to hang up on me.
Yeah, but he would love you for that. You know, it seems like, you know, you kept, remember those callers they would call? I was teasing you the other day about Rich from Maine. Remember, the same guys would call you every single week. They were like your family.
Rich would be on a road trip every weekend, and he would check in. Look, I was on in the middle of the night for many of those, you know, years doing Hey, LaGuardia, What's the Story? And what a great time to, you know, how do you pass the time? You call Hey, LaGuardia, What's the Story on a road trip. So, yeah, just so many fun memories and so many, you know, those callers really helped me get through those overnight hours. That's for sure.
Well, I think it's the reverse. I really think you help them get through what they were doing. And things that people don't know about you, they probably don't know enough about, you know, the charity work that you do in your brother's name and other people's name, and your golf tournament is renowned. And, you know, I wish we had 2 hours, because these are the little things you do that people aren't even aware of. I remember one time I was going to Ireland and you said to me, you have got to stop in some pub in Doonbeg or something, Western Ireland, because you said it was so Irish and so happy. And my friends and I went there, dropped your name, and had a blast.
I love Ireland. I'm really an ambassador for that country because I just love the people and the golf courses, and have done TV shows throughout Ireland and Northern Ireland for, gosh, 25 years. So, yes, if you ever need any tidbits on where to stay and where to play and what to do in Ireland. But, Leslie, you've just been such a joy as a friend, and, you know, I've looked up to you. You know, when I used to be the kid on the block, right? You used to say, Ann, you're the young kid on the block, because I started right out of college in New York City.
Yeah.
And I've always looked up to you. You always have been such a great mentor, not only for me, but for so many other women, and just so proud of your accomplishments. And you're just a superstar. So I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and just sharing a few minutes. I know we could do hours and hours, just you and me talking about our experiences in this business, but we'll get you on. And congratulations on that Life Achievement Award, right? We're going to schedule that, hopefully, throughout this crazy pandemic. You're the first woman to be honored to win the Sports Emmy Lifetime Achievement Award, which is just unbelievable.
Yes, it was so, and you would have been there. It's virtual now. I'll let you know the date. But I just want to say, you know, you were the kid, and you still have a child's heart, you know? So really, congratulations to you. Love to Scott and your family. And here's to the next 33 years.
I love it. I'll toast to that. Leslie Visserly, I adore you. Thanks so much.
Me too. Bye, love.
Bye. And now I'd like to bring in a former intern of mine. She must get sick of me saying former intern because she, you know, she's not 21 anymore, right? But Kelly Burke, who's the color analyst, play-by-play reporter, former president of the Association of Women in Sports Media, now the board chair, my former intern, and I'll say that with so much pride always, Kelly Burke. Hey, Kelly, thanks for checking in this morning. How are you?
I'm great, Ann. It's good to always good to talk to you. And no, to answer your question, I never get sick of being called your former intern. That was one of the best summers of my life.
Kelly came out and hung out with me in the Hamptons one summer. And, you know, I run a production company on top of all those years I was doing the show on FAN and the Golf Channel, et cetera, et cetera. And we had a good time, girl. That was your first experience, I think, out of Arizona, right?
Yeah, out of college. I had just graduated from Arizona State. I'd done the summer before is where I'd met you in 2003 because I was part of the IRTS Summer Fellowship Program, which you had been part of years before that. So that's how we initially connected and we stayed in touch. And yeah, I just graduated, was looking for a job. And you said, well, why don't you come out here and work for me for the summer and intern for me? And that was the year that the U.S. Open was at Shinnecock. And then I got to tag along with you to the U.S. Tennis Open. So, I mean, it was eye-opening for me to get that type of national experience coming out as a 22-year-old.
Yeah, I just so enjoyed having you there. You're like a, I don't want to say daughter, but like a younger sister to me. We had so much fun and we've been able to, you know, stay just so close all these years. And you know, I went to your wedding and I love your husband and your family. And I'm just so proud of you. You are now doing so many, you know, games, color analyst, play-by-play. Tell us what you're up to these days.
Yeah, so I mainly cover college sports, and I work as mainly a color analyst. I also do play-by-play, though, too, and then a sideline reporter during football season. But I cover everything from college volleyball to football to basketball to softball and track. So it's been interesting to navigate this time during the pandemic, obviously. But and then also I have a football podcast as well. But you've been a huge part of that just because I worked in local TV as a sportscaster for 11 years. And then watching you, you've always been independent as a freelancer. And I wanted to make the transition to doing games full time. And so now I work as a freelancer, and a big part of the reason I decided to make that jump is because I saw someone like you doing it well, and you exposed me to the challenges that are out there with it. But you're somebody that you've always pivoted. You've had great staying power in the industry. You're obviously very good at what you do. There's no way you'd have done it this long if you hadn't been. But you've been such a wonderful example in so many facets of your life for me.
Well, I really appreciate that. I mean, a lot of people ask, like, you know, how do you do it as an independent reporter and sports talk show host? You know, I'm not staff at any one place, even though I've been at WFAN since the very beginning, 1987. You know, we were a staff for 1 year, maybe a little over a year. And in the early days, they had overhired and had a cut back. And so I was part of the cutbacks. They actually got rid of like 20 some people after a year and a half of the station's inception. So I had to figure out a way in my early days. I continued to do the show, obviously, but only, you know, it was part time. So I had to figure out a way to really earn a living and to afford to live in Manhattan. So I just became somewhat entrepreneurial, and it's kind of hard to explain that to young people, but if you have an appetite for you know, business and being an entrepreneur and following your dream, I think you can do it. It's not the easiest path in the world, but there's ways to make it happen. And so I'm so glad I could inspire you, Kelly. You're doing a great job. You're young, you're resilient, and you're actually just inspiring me. So continued success. And I can't thank you enough for being part of my life, really.
Well, thank you, Ann. I mean, you, like you said, you're family to me, basically. And you've paved the way for women like me to continue to have amazing opportunities and to grow this industry for women in sports media. And you were one of the original pioneers. I mean, look at what you've done just at WFAN, and that's just a small aspect of your career. But to think that, you know, you're going to be covering your 22nd Masters this fall, you know, you've been covering the US Open since 1982. I mean, it's just mind-blowing what you've done in your career, and I couldn't have a better example.
Well, I adore you and continued success, my friend. And tell Chris I said hello, and let's get together soon and have some fun, right?
Sounds good.
All right, Kelly, thanks so much for checking in. I really appreciate your kind words.
Of course, anytime, man. Happy Fourth of July weekend.
You too. Well, I just really want to thank all of you for listening all these years, and hopefully I'll continue to do a lot more shows. Our Talk and Golf show has a 13-week season, and that 13th week ended last week. Thank you, Travelers, very much for sponsoring that 13 weeks of Talk and Golf. And hopefully you'll hear me from the PGA Championship, the U.S. Open Tennis, and the Masters, and hopefully Talk and Golf will come back next year. I wanted to have women on in the sports industry on who I've mentored, who I've perhaps inspired, legends in the business like Leslie Visser and Katrina Adams, and future legends like Kelly Burke, whom you just heard, and L.A. Winnington, my former interns, and Anne LaGorrie Foundation scholarship recipient. Hope you enjoyed this special edition of Hey LaGorrie, What's the Story? WFAN's 33rd anniversary week. My thanks to Pete Hoffman in the studio and to all of you who continue to listen to this great sports station and have supported my shows all these years. Be sure to connect with me on social media. Stay in touch. Stay well. Stay safe. And I will talk to you from the Major Golf Championships and the U.S. Open and that next season of Talkin' Golf with Anne LaGorrie. Bye.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.